Of course, we're in the book of Numbers, and we're giving a third chapter. This is about Aaron and his family.
Numbers chapter 3. These are the generations of Aharon and Moshe, the time when the Lord spoke with Moshe on Mount Sinai. These are the names of the sons of Aharon: Nadab the firstborn, and Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. These are the names of the sons of Aharon, the anointed priests, whom he had ordained to serve as priests. But Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered unauthorized fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai, and they had no children. So Eleazar and Itamar served as priests in the lifetime of Aharon their father. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Bring the tribe of Levi near, and set them before Aharon the priest, that they may minister to him. They shall keep guard over him and over the whole congregation before the tent of meeting, as a minister at the tabernacle. They shall guard at all the furnishings of the tent of meeting and keep guard over the people of Israel as they minister at the tabernacle. And you shall give the Levites to Aharon and his sons. They are wholly given to him from among the people of Israel. And you shall appoint Aharon and his sons, and they shall guard their priesthood. But if any outsider comes near, he shall be put to death." And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, "Behold, I have taken the Levites from among the people of Israel, instead of every firstborn who opens a womb among the people of Israel. The Levites shall be mine, and all the firstborn are mine. On the day that I struck down all the firstborn in the land of Mitzrayim, I consecrated for my own all the firstborn of Israel from both man and beast. They shall be mine. I am the Lord." And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, in the wilderness of Sinai, saying, "List the sons of Levi by fathers' houses and by clans. Every male from a month old and upward you shall list." So Moshe listed them according to the word of the Lord, as he commanded. And these were the sons of Levi by their names: Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. These are the names of the sons of Gershon by their clans: Libni and Shimei. And the sons of Kohath by their clans: Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the sons of Merari by their clans: Mahli and Mushi. And these are the clans of the Levites by their fathers' houses. To Gershon belonged the clan of the Libnites and the clan of the Shemites. They were the clans of the Gershonites. Their listing according to the number of all the males from a month old and upper was 7,500. The clans of the Gershonites were to camp behind the tabernacle to the west, with Eliasaph, the son of Lael, as chief of the father's house of the Gershonites. And the guard duty of the sons of Gershon in the tent of meeting involved the tabernacle, the tent with its covering, the screen for the entrance of the tent of meeting, the hangings of the courts, the screen for the door of the courts that is around the tabernacle, the altar, and its cords, all the service connected with these. To Kohath belonged the clan of the Amramites, and the clan of the Isarites, and the clan of the Hebronites, and the clan of the Uzielites. These are the clans of the Kohathites, according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, there were 8,600, keeping guard over the sanctuary. The clans of the sons of Kohath were to camp on the south side of the tabernacle, with Elisaphan, the son of Uziel, as chief of the fathers of the houses of the clans of the Kohathites. And their guard duty involved the ark, the table, the lampstand, the altars, the vessels of the sanctuary with which the priests minister, and the screen, all the service connected with these. And Eleazar, the son of Aharon, the priest, was to be chief over the chief of the Levites, and to have oversight of those who kept guard over the sanctuary. To Merari belonged the clan of the Mahlites and the clan of the Mushites. These are the clans of Merari. Their listing according to the number of all the males from month old and upward was 6,200. And the chief of the father's house of the clans of Merari and Zuriel, the son of Abihail, they were to camp on the north side of the tabernacle. And the appointed guard duty of the sons of Merari involved the frames of the tabernacle, the bars, the pillars, the bases, and all the accessories, all the service connected with these, also the pillars around the court with their bases and pegs and cords. Those who were to camp before the tabernacle in the east, before the tent of meeting toward the sunrise, were Moshe and Aharon and his sons, guarding the sanctuary itself, to protect the people of Israel. And any outsider who came near was to be put to death. All those listed among the Levites, among Moshe and Aharon, listed the commandment of the Lord. By clans, all the males from a month old and upward were 22,000. And the Lord said to Moshe, list all the firstborn males of the people of Israel from a month old and upward, taking the number of their names. And you shall take the Levites for me. I am the Lord. Instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel and the cattle of the Levites, instead of all the firstborn among the cattle of the people of Israel. So Moshe listed all the firstborn among the people of Israel as the Lord commanded him. And the firstborn males, according to the number of names from a month old and upward, were listed as 22,273. And the Lord spoke to Moshe, saying, take the Levites instead of all the firstborn among the people of Israel, and the cattle of the Levites instead of all their cattle. The Levites shall be mine. I am the Lord. As the redemption price for the 273 of the firstborn of the people of Israel, over and above the number of all the male Levites, you shall take 5 shekels per head. You shall take them according to the shekel of the sanctuary, the shekel of 20 gerahs, and give the money to Aharon and his sons as the redemption price for those who are over. So Moshe took the redemption money from those who were over and above those redeemed by the Levites. From the firstborn of the people of Israel, he took the money, 1,365 shekels, by the shekel of the sanctuary. And Moshe gave the redemption money to Aharon and his sons, according to the word of the Lord, as the Lord commanded Moshe.
Bunch of numbers again, right? And names. So what do you see here in this one? Any questions?
I found it very interesting that in the earlier chapters, it talks about the 12 tribes, like Reuben and so on in this section, and, you know, Ephraim and that in this section, how they kind of oriented around the tabernacle. Now we're looking at the family of Levi, but they're also organized around the tabernacle in an inner circle by clan in some fashion.
Yeah. It's fascinating anyway. You start thinking about that for a moment. So God has a story here telling us what it's all about. We just have to figure out, what are you talking about, God? Yes.
So the 5 shekels, was that to ransom all the babies?
Of the, what was the number, 217 or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, it was
273, yeah. You, Dave,
to the left. Yes, I think the thing is that struck me was that the Lord put under the custody of this one family, or, you know, each family had charge over something, and not to think of ourselves as being in charge of something minor, because here the Lord gave this family, Merari, the sons of Merari, the charge of the boards of the tabernacle, the bars and the pillars and sockets and pins and vessels, you know, and that we would think of these things as mundane, but not to God.
Sometimes it looks like it's at random, doesn't it? Because we have, go ahead.
Well, I know at home, I make a list of things that have to be done every single day, and it's wiping the walls, wiping this, it's the mundane things, but if those things don't be kept up, it can become dirty very quickly. So they were very busy in that area, so I would think that he would organize and have things cleaned as mundane as it was said, but it would keep it clean and in orderly.
But remember, this was the second year they're at Mount Sinai. And now he has called calls them the army. He doesn't call them the children. He calls them an army. So he's just taking them in, and he made an army. Army on the east, army on the south, army on the west, and army on the north. Now, I said last week that this is in a picture how God is getting arrayed for a battle. All right? And when we keep farthering down, you'll see in chapter 10, a certain order will move first. But we're looking here now at the tribe of Levi. And we have, those are the ones that now are all the firstborn that were named. We already read this today, right? In the 15th day of the first month, and all the cattle on the first day of the 15th month now have been switched. Now we have a whole new firstborn, all of the tribe of Israel. So in the very beginning, God's saying, all of Israel, you're mine, but now I'm going to take only one of your tribes. And I'm going to use that one tribe for one reason. And therefore, they now will become what we would call the firstborn. He says, I will keep, he says, Levites are my first. So now he's changing the rules, changing his command, or is he showing us something that he has in mind? You remember that in, I haven't gotten the 10th chapter yet, but when the cloud moves, what tribe moves, or what branch of the army moves first? One's on the east. Okay? Now, the pattern is very interesting here, because the first pattern we see here is of the sons of Levi. By the way, Levi means to join, or to belong to, or in a sense to be connected to. That's what that Levi means, to join or connect with. And so here we're saying that with the tribe of Levi, they're going to be joined or connected to something. What were they to join and to connected to? Yeah, the dwelling place of appointments. Remember, this is the dwelling place of appointments. Tabernacle means dwelling. And what you translated there as a congregation, this horrible translation, should be moad, appointment. So these are now going to be joined in to what's called the place of appointment. Now what they're going to be doing, we already read there in Leviticus, what was the function the priest supposed to do? Teach the people what is clean, what is unclean. Teach people what is holy, what is unholy. And we went through that with the book of Leviticus, right? So now we're coming here to this particular point. It seemed like it's a dead issue now about what happened in Leviticus. No, it was instructions of what they are to do for the people. Now we're doing something that God has in mind. As I said before, 2-3 weeks ago, I guess I can't remember, is that their commanding officer is, where does he dwell? He dwells in the Holy of Holies. That's the commanding officer. That's not just overseer. He's the commander. And when he leaves, that is the cloud, leaves, guess what? Everybody goes with him. He is, in a sense, the front line. Yes.
Are you saying that God in the cloud is the commanding officer?
Correct.
Okay.
Because they couldn't travel unless that moved. For 40 years, they couldn't move until that thing moved. When that thing moved, then they moved. And they had to move in a certain order, a certain fashion, a certain place. And the 10th chapter clarifies that. But we're not there yet. We find this interesting here with Levites, and it has to do with something that is to bring near unto me, or bring near unto Aaron, the priest. So these are going to be brought unto, and in a sense, joined with the priest. The function of the priesthood, they will be connected to it and joined with it. Now, they don't partake in and do the function of the priesthood, because that's a function of priesthood, priesthood only. And their function we see here is to take that dwelling place of appointment and carry it, dissemble it, and move it. Not anybody could do it. And it includes, he says, a stranger comes in. What happens if somebody else does it? Like, so I want to volunteer. You're dead. All right? Because these now are the first ones. God seems changing things first. The first should be last, the last should be first. And we say, what on earth is he talking about now? Here's a real good example where the last tribe that did not have a piece of land became the first tribe, in a sense, to be part of the dwelling place. Now, they wait for commands. They wait for orders like anybody else waits for orders. But they are to make sure that the commander house, the dwelling place, is taken care of. And when somebody is, well, later on we'll see, I think it's this chapter, that when people come to the dwelling place to give something to God, has to go through the Levites, not physically, has to go through the Levites before they can go into the priesthood. So like a second time around, you might say, they have to do. But they're not really spoken of too much except to serve the dwelling place. As we keep on going through this thing, we'll go through names in a little bit, okay? And we find that the function of the Levites was to do what? Verse 8, they shall keep all the instruments of the tabernacle of the congregation, or keep all the instruments, all the belongings of the dwelling place of the appointments, and the charge of the children of Israel to do the service of the tabernacle. So they have a couple of jobs there to do. Whatever the charge of the people of Israel want to do, if they're going to give something to God or give something to the place, they had to go through the Levites to be able to do this. All right, just a simple little understanding. Verse 9, I know it's a little odd word in some of your English languages. And here he is. You know, these are the words of Yahweh. These are not the words of some philosophical guy who said, you know what, we ought to set this place up this way. Because he had been given a command, and everything that Moses was ever commanded to do, Moses did. And Aaron was, of course, a primary man in that function, that everything that Moses did. So we're coming to this point where, and he says, now, thou shalt give or put or place. What that word should be there in Hebrew from English. The Levites, or I would say, those who are to be joined with. These are the ones, Levites, the ones they put joined with. What are you going to do with them? And he says, I want you to put them in charge and give them to whom? The priest, the sons of Aaron. So that's the function. So now God, we see, has taken this tribe and now given it to, or the function with, and joined with the priesthood. And he says, now they're mine. Now we keep on going here for just a little bit, because we're trying to picture something the best you can. Okay, or best that we can, I should say. And this is where the 10th chapter said, no one else is going to do this. If you do, you kill them. Stranger means anybody. Okay, in the previous one we've seen where if in the priesthood, that if a stranger, meaning even a priest who's not doing his function right, or he's out of order, doing something not commanded to do, guess what happens to him? His life is taken. Pretty heavy stuff, don't you think? Well, why? Because that's the dwelling place of the Creator. All right? He does that job. Without, yes. That's a function. What? See, wow. Listen, each one of us. Now, I think it's in the book of Hebrews. I might be mistaken. But it says each one of us are built to place in a certain location within the tabernacle or within the temple of God. We are not to say, well, I want to be moved over from here over to there because that's a more important place. Or I want to go help that person. And he said, no, I put you here. Do what I said for you to do. Function as a position and the job I gave you to do. That guy is going to do his job. You do here. I will deal with him if he doesn't do his job. And I'll deal with you if you don't do your job. You got the message? All right. God is a God of order, not chaos. Now, does God allow volunteers? Of course he does. But we're not talking about this. We're talking about the dwelling place of the appointments. Okay? The function of the high priest and the function of the Levites. They have been, quote, moved up in status. Right? Best way you could put this. Now remember, he said all that verse 13 is the firstborn of mine. They brought him out of Israel. Right? Well, let's go back to verse 12 for a minute. And behold, I have taken the Levites from the children of Israel instead of the firstborn. Now the Levites are mine. I'm taking them. I'm not taking the firstborn. And the number of redemption means when you have more than one, you have to buy the kid back. And so you redeem your kid back. And there's a technicality in how much each one would cost, depends upon the age and all that. That would be previously read this. Of a certain age, it's worth this much. A certain age, it's worth that much, and so on and so forth. We went through it. When you're older, you're not worth as much as when you were middle-aged. Anyway, and now here, verse 14 now. Now God is speaking now again to Moses and the place, the wilderness in Sinai, because they're still there. This is the second year there, right? And the number of the Levites, that is those who are to be joined with the priesthood. Yes.
Okay. He's taking the Levites, and he's not taking the firstborn anymore.
Not even the animals.
Okay, so did the firstborn used to serve
not
in
yet.
Some
the tabernacle,
capacity?
No.
Then what did he do with them? He just redeemed them?
Just redeemed them.
Okay.
How did he redeem the firstborn of Israel? What? Yes, took the life of the Egyptians' firstborn to spare the life of the Israel's firstborn. God redeemed them by the death of Egypt. Sometimes we don't think that way. We think, oh, the Egyptians were horrible, rotten, stinking, filthy, unclean, and nasty. And no, God said the prophets is that Ephraim is my beloved. Now, that's what he said. You may not agree with him, but that's what he says. All right. Now we go down here. Yes.
But in the following verse, it says he's going to set apart the firstborn.
Yes. Now he's taken that firstborn and set it aside. What's he done with it? He's exchanged the firstborn for the whole tribe of Israel, of Levi. Now the firstborn are no longer belong to God. They're no longer his. They're back to the family. And this is the reason why there was 270 or 273, whatever, too many. Guess what? The family had to redeem them, buy them back. And that's what they did. They bought them back. They are no longer part of the firstborn. They're now part of Israel. We say, what? That's contrary to everything God ever sought. Well, here you have it. Right smack dab. I'm exchanging them. I'm changing the situation. Okay? Why? He didn't like them? Or he has something else in mind? I find this very fascinating, my personal opinion.
I don't read that.
Oh. Okay. Verse 2. Behold, I have taken Levi from among the children of Israel instead of the firstborn. Now, what does that mean? That means he's not taking the firstborn. That's what's written. All right? Does that explain you? What I'm trying to say to you? That's exactly what it's written there. He said, I'm not taking them. Do you understand what I'm saying, Dana? Dan? Do you understand what I just said? He said there, I am not taking them. Listen again. I know you're talking to Elder here for a minute, and you asked me the question, then back to Elder again. He says here, verse 12. Listen, I'm not correcting you, I'm just saying, listen carefully what it says. He says, I have taken the firstborn among the house of Israel. Instead of all the firstborn, I'm taking whom? The Levites. So now he no longer is he going to take the firstborn. That's His will, His plan, His thinking, and His way. We have to come back and find out later on, as time goes by, what this is all about. Yeah, you had a question, Bill?
No, you covered it there. I was going to say the same thing in verse 12, what it says.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it seems to, yes, Ellie had the question.
Is that to be considered rejection of the firstborn, or just that they are not going to be employed?
He's not going to be employed. He's not going to use them in the function that he's going to use the Levites in the function of. He took the least of the tribes, that was Levite, and made them number one. All right? Look at the numbers. Now, God always sees to pick the one that's unimportant or the least number. And makes them the ones that are responsible. That's His will. That's how He operates. He's never taken the majority and made them the rulers. Yes.
Is it possible that the firstborn that He rejected or turned away, is it possible that some of them may have participated in the calf?
They were already killed. Everybody participating in the calf were killed. Already. This is not afterthought. This is after. They were already killed in the book of Exodus. No, they're not there. They were killed. They were killed. They did not survive that day. All right. Please, it's not, God is not rejecting them. He's not going to say they're not mine now. He hadn't rejected Israel, hadn't rejected the people of Israel, hadn't rejected anybody. He's talking about the people who's going to be surrounding the captain or the commander in chief, who's going to be the closest ones to the commander in chief. Now we have to accept the mere fact. I am not chosen to be anything else except who I am. If you back there in those days, even Aaron didn't choose to become priesthood. He was appointed. Moses didn't choose to be the one to deliver them. He was appointed. He didn't volunteer, stand up, deliver, I'll give them out. None of these people, firstborn from the age of 12, from the age of 1 month, they didn't volunteer and say, please take me. No, it is God's work. This is the work of God. This is the thoughts of God. This is the mind of God. This is the action of God. Yes.
It's just interesting because I'm looking at this, you know, talking about how he had the firstborn for a function, and then he said, well, instead of the firstborn, now I'm going to do
and a very short
this
function.
Instead. But he switches it back with Messiah, because Messiah is his firstborn.
Okay. What is the Messiah representing?
The
high priest.
Right. So it goes...
So who is being given to the high priest?
Firstborn.
No! Levites. The Levites! Because of his name. The one that is to join. Now, they didn't join because they were born joined. They were joined because God says, give them, Moses. Take them and place them and give them to the high priest. That's what their function is. Because we're so earthy, we can't figure this thing out. Look, get past the earthy thing to say, is this place? He said, make sure you do not alter the plan that I gave you, Moses, that you saw on the mountain. Not one thing be removed from one place. Do it precisely as you saw it. Now, I believe Moses was shown an awful lot of stuff. And taught an awful lot of stuff. Explained an awful lot of stuff. Okay? It's okay. We can say that, well, God has, he is a respecter of persons now, isn't he?
No.
He respects the Levites, but oh, blankety blank with them. No. What happens to the Levite when they do something wrong? What happens to a priest who does something wrong?
They die.
Open book to very chapter, talking about two of them were killed. All right. Well, you want to be a priest? So. We're looking at this thing, and we have to ask, why is it that God is doing what he's doing? Why has he made this exchange? Do I need to understand? If I don't, then leave me ignorant. I'd be willing to remain ignorant. If God does not let me know, that's okay. I'm not going to try to outguess him. If he said that, I accept it. That's it. It's no longer. I'm not going to take the firstborn. I'm going to take Levi instead. Okay. Do I challenge his jurisdiction? All right. Excuse me. Now, in Levi, there were three sons. Right? Drop down to verse 17. And the name of those three sons was Gershon, Kahat, and Moriah. Well, we'll talk about their names, what they mean, a little later. Well, no, let's do it right now. The first man, his name means the exiled one. Exiled, cut off, removed, cast out. That's the name of the first son, the firstborn son. The second son, his name is called, and basically in English, to assemble or join yourself to assemble. This is simple. What's this? Exiled, then assemble. And the last one said bitter. Oh, here we are. First one is what? Exiled. Second one is what? Assemble yourself together. And the last one is bitter. What? What does all that mean? Huh? I've got the slightest idea. Well, I know you have to do some research in other names to find out a little bit more in primary what that really means, but there is another definition for the last one. This is bitter. What that really means is someone who is in sorrow, crying, and weeping. That's basic. Doesn't mean bitterness, anger, or hostility. It's something happened to him tragically. And after it took place, what happens? You become stronger. How many times have you gone through a trial, a difficult trial, and sometimes it's very long. You may have had to cry and weep and bawl out to God. And one time it's all over with, you finally look back and say, oh, that's why he didn't take it away. Here I am now. If that same thing comes, I will be able to endure. I'll be stronger than I was before. You understand what I'm saying? And this is now, we go with this one that was exiled. And we say, okay, what happened next? Assemble yourselves together. I mean, what happened next? Yes, bad things happened. Now, what's going to take place? All right? Strength and endurance. Do you think it ever happens to anybody else? Probably not. Let's go on. Now, 18th verse is very important, okay, in my personal opinion, okay? Because now we're talking about Gershon and his, quote, exile group was to do. This is their function around the tabernacle. They were stationed at one specific location and no place else. And they had sons, and he had sons of sons and sons, so on and so forth. And keep on going down. Let's drop down now to verse 23. The families of the Gershonites, the exiled, the ones who were exiled, will pitch their tent where? On the west side. Why does he say the west side first? But in the other chapter it was east, south, west, and north. Now we start with the west side. Why on the west side? Is they are assigned. Why would God say, that's the first place, first set of Levites on the west side? Huh? Why aren't they on the east side? West side. What was facing west? Well, let's move ahead real quick. Verse 25 for a moment. They are the charge of the sons of Gershon, the tabernacle of appointments. They are to have what? The tent, the covering thereof, the handling of the door of the tabernacle of assembly. Door, entryway. There it was, to enter into the, quote, tabernacle or dwelling place, there was a door. And so the first thing he did is put a tribe right smack dab in front of that door. Priority number one, my door. Don't let anybody walk through. That was the function. And it says, exile them. Don't permit them. Cut them off. Don't permit them to come in. You understand what I'm saying? So his name is kind of like reversed in his meaning. That was their function, to do something. And the hangings of the courts and the curtains of the door of the courts, and which is by the tabernacle, by the altar around about, and the cords and all that is the service thereof. So they had a big function. They didn't take down the structure, did they? They had to take something else down, including the door. They had to take the entryway down. They had to take the curtains down. They had to take all that stuff down, and that was their job. All right? But I want to go back just a little bit. Now, we were on the west side. Who was on the west side also? Who was on the west side also? Farther away. Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. On the west side, the camp of the double heap, for God has heard, and splendorous. To forget? Nah. Payment of God, rock is preserved. Now, that's their function. You got to preserve something. We go on farther, and the right hand of judgment, cut a path. That's what's on the west side. Farther away. So you see a picture of a pattern. Yes.
What I find more fascinating is not so much the names of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin, what they meant.
Right.
What I find more fascinating is that particularly Ephraim and Manasseh were at the forefront of the tribes who were forced into exile, as Gershon's name means.
That's it, fascinating. Plus the Levite, his name was translated as exile. That's an interesting thought. That's an interesting thought. But nonetheless, see, we understand what's going on. The next family of, next son was whom? Kohat. That's one to assemble, or one assemble oneself together. And where were they located at? In 29, on the south side. Okay, here it is. Now we have the west, and then we have the south. Why? Okay. There are the interesting names. Now God names who he wants to be in charge. Let's backtrack here. Well, first let's go here. And it says here, the sons of a certain person. All right? Now the Kohanites shall be whom? Verse 30. El Afon. We have Yosef. El Yosef. Means God has, wrong word. God protects. His name means, my God protects. And he's the son of this other guy whose name is what? Ezeiel. You know what that word means? My strength is God. So here we have God picking a certain man who is in charge of the Kohanites. And his name means, my God has protected. And he's on the south side. South side. Let's go back to verse 24. You remember Kohanite? The Gershon? Verse 24. Here's the names again. Now God named who he wants to be in charge. I didn't name them. God did. And verse 24, it says, the chief of the house of the fathers of the Gershonites shall be Eliosaph. Yosef means add, so God adds. That's the leader of the west side. His father's name is what? Lael, belonging to God. So what was added belonged to God in the first place. Now that's on the west side of the Gershons. So we see a pattern here that their names now become something important and has a picture of what God says, why I chose them, and this is their function. This is the job that I am doing. I am going to protect. I am going to provide. I am going to add. And it's all from me around my tabernacle. The closest members that come close to the tabernacle, who are responsible for taking care of the tabernacle. He says, I'm there. I'm with them. And in verse 30, what he read there says, God is my, has protected, and his father's name is, my strength is God. Now, Numbers, let's go to 30. I don't want to go there. Got to get this job done here quickly. Let's go to 35. Here's the other son. Remember, there are three sons of Levi. Here's the other one. And this is the family of them. And what are they supposed to do? God picked a certain person, the chief one of the house of the father of the families of Merizai was Zuiel. It has to do with the rock and God. My rock is God. And he's a son of somebody named what? Meaning, my father is might. So we're addressing now, not people. Once again, we're addressing the functions of God and what he's showing us around his tabernacle. He is going to protect his tabernacle. His tabernacle is a rock. His tabernacle is hard to penetrate. You can't get through. You don't have to worry about protecting the general. The general's already protected. When the general leaves, everybody else goes with him. All right? And where are they stationed at? They're stationed north. That's weird. West, south, north. Oh, what's missing? Which will break up real quickly. What is this? Six? What's 2:30? Is that right? Oh my. Verse 38. Aaron. The sons of Aram are on the east side. Yes.
Did I miss the south side being mentioned at all in chapter 3?
Did I what?
The south side, did I miss it? Is it not mentioned?
Yes. First one must talk to the west. The second one must talk about the south, then the north. It's all covered. Don't you remember? Verse 29. All this is of a lot of facts, right? So what are all these facts telling you? What is it showing you?
Well, it shows me that he cares about having a profitable and a workable system. It also shows that it is his discretion who he wants to do what, and that he takes it very seriously. So don't commit yourself to do it if you're not going to do it.
All right.
Well,
I can understand that
because
statement,
yes. Nadab and
I put the other way around.
Well,
when you know God told you to do it, you better do it.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. It also means that he pays attention. So be aware he pays attention. And it should mean something to us because it means something to him.
What's the detail showing you?
God has a pattern. God has a plan.
What is his plan? Oh, yes, first holy day, second holy day, third, always seventh holy day. This is not talking about holy days. This is talking about something else.
I think this whole
in the 11th chapter, 10th chapter, this whole army starts moving. Where were they supposed to go? Where were they supposed to go? What did God promise Abraham and Isaac and Jacob? Where were they supposed to go? All right. Are you thinking to walk in there with a piece of cake? They have to defend and fight for something. Why would God want them to fight for it? Why would God want you to fight for anything? Why don't you just say, God, give me a piece of cake and I'll let you do all the job? Why would he want to make you? Why would he want to get you strong? Why would he want to get you to have courage? Why would he want to get you to be brave? Why would he want you to get... What is it just because? What? Yes.
If you don't, you appreciate something more when you have invested in it. You have fought for it.
You spend your life, your time, and everything. And that's what this is really telling us, showing where they are to spend. These people are learning how to spend their entire world and life around what the commander in chief says and does. They are to respond when he responds. They go when he goes. They travel when he travels. They go to war when he goes to war. You know, Abraham didn't want to go to war, but guess what God made him do? Go to war. And destroyed four empires. One man, but two other men, destroyed four empires. Pretty powerful guy, wouldn't you think? Well, no. You think Abraham was such a brave guy? He says, boy, you know, I'm a hero of heroes. I'm the bravest of all brave. I'm the wisest of all wise. He didn't want to do that. He knew God said, now go to war. He didn't just fight and deliver his son. He drove him all the way back across the other river. Do you think he just, why did he just kick him out of territory? Because God said, get him out. And that's what Abraham did. Yes.
Okay, well, what about this tabernacle that is, this tabernacle in our bodies that is not, you know, made with flesh. I mean, those scriptures in the New Testament that talk about
so
that.
So what is it made up of? That's a good question. What is it made up of?
It's made up of the Holy Spirit in us.
Living stones.
We are living stones.
Okay. What's the difference between a living stone and a dead stone? Oh, that's a good question, right?
A living stone has life.
What does it do? Okay, here's a stone sitting right there. It's alive. It sits and sits and sits and sits and sits and sits and sits. What happened to the stone that followed the Israelites out? Oh, who is the stone? You think a stone means a stone? And it says our God is a stone? And it says our Messiah is a stone. What do they do? Just sit there, do nothing, they're on the landscape thing, and you can't move them? So a stone is something more than just what? A dead stone is a dead stone. A living stone does something. It cannot be broken. Cannot be broken. Whatever it functions, whatever it does, that stone keeps working, and no one can stop the stone. So when you become a living stone, and you're doing the work of God, or God doing the work in you, what is it that can just crush you? If you're a living stone, like the Messiah is a living stone, did somebody able to crush your son, the Son of God? Well, in the flesh, yes, but not in spirit. You could be crushed in the flesh, but can your spirit be crushed? If you're connected with the Son of God, you're connected with the Spirit of God, you become a stone that cannot be destroyed. But you become a stone to build with, to create with, to have form, to have shape, to have a function. Not that you stay in one place for eternity. No, that's not what the stone really represents. We think it represents stone because it never moves. Unless some kid picks the one up and throws it. Or you pick up one and hurl across the water, see if it skip. No, those are all dead stones. The cornerstone. And the apostles are what? Foundations. What are they? Are they stones?
Foundations.
The reason why you listen to what the Bible you got is because somebody, living stone, and you trust that living stone to tell you the truth, guide you, and to lead you to wherever you go. So around this tabernacle, when it moves, my rock, my God is a rock. My rock, my God is a stone. He's hard as a stone. What? That means, no, he does work. He's a builder. He's a creator. He's a designer. I'm babbling on, right? Anyway, I want to go on to, we'll finish this thing up. It had to do with the firstborn and switching the numbers around and find out the different numbers between one or the other. There was two different letters in the Bible that have two different numbers, and it's always a scholarly debate one way or the other. I don't want to go into that one, but it had to do with 273 more of those who of the house of Israel were greater than the house of Levite. And then they were supposed to do something. They had to buy them back. Because they were gotten. How did God? God did redeem, bought back. Oh, I should say, he sold the firstborn of Israel and bought the Levites. In a sense, he redeemed the Levites. Now they become the primary one. What's the function of Levite? Let me ask you a question. Now, this is a really weird one. This question is really weird now. Are you spiritually a Levite? Think about it. Like last Sabbath, I talked about the firstborn, and God says, my firstborn is Ephraim. Wait a minute, wasn't Manasseh? No, God's firstborn was Ephraim. Then he said, Israel is my firstborn. You got two firstborns? How many firstborns does God have? The firstborn are mine. For how many were there? Wow, there were over, well, let's see, what was the number of the firstborn that belonged to him? And he says, they're mine. Oh, what was that number? Right off the top of my head, I can't think what it is. 7,000 was one. Please help me. Yeah, where was it? Number of the firstborn, Levites and Moses, numbered the commandment of Aaron and the family of the males of the month of upward were 22,100. And that was a number. And then we named all the numbers of the other Israelites, all this stuff firstborn, and there was more one than the other. Then he said, now, oh, I am picking now, like he did with Jacob before he was born, and he wasn't the firstborn, but God called him, that's the one I am picking, that's the one I have chosen, that's the one that belongs to me. We say, well, God, you're not fair. You are a respecter of persons, right? Because we have this feeling inside that God does pick. You know, he does pick. Why did he pick you? Because you were a loser? Or he had something else in mind? Was Jacob in the womb a loser? He didn't know right from wrong. He knew nothing. But God picked him before he was born. Abraham's firstborn son? Guess what? No. Oh, that one there. Which one? The one they haven't had yet. That's the one. So we're not talking about the firstborn of the bodies of flesh. We're talking about the firstborn of spirit. And we know that Messiah was the firstborn from the dead. He is not just the only firstborn. For God talks often about the firstborn. He said, Israel is my firstborn. Is Israel his firstborn? Or is Yahshua the firstborn? Is Ephraim the firstborn? Or Yahshua the firstborn? All the above. Because we have in my mind what firstborn means, and God has to bring it down to earth to tell us what the simplest definition of the firstborn was. That one was breaks forth. That's actually what coming from the room means in Hebrew. The one that breaks forth. Ooh, breaks forth from where? From death to life. And the Messiah said to us, you already have life. You have passed from death to life. What? They still walk around the face of the earth. They're men in their 30s, maybe mid-30s. And they still walk around. And they didn't. They died at 90 years old or something. But they what? They're not dead? No, they're alive? What is he talking about? We know he's not talking. They understood something that we, because we look at the flesh. And we have to have, God gives us the comparison of flesh to understand what it is on a spiritual level. One who breaks forth. Now, did the Messiah break forth from Hoshea? Yes. Chapter 1. Genesis 1. Verse 2. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the earth. For it was in Tohu Bavohu Vahoshech, deep as darkness can get. And then he said, out of darkness came life. Out of death comes life. Apostle Paul, first you don't know what you're going to be. The seed has to die. Then it comes up and it's a different one. than it was once before. And he says we are a type of first fruits, firstborn, first ones. Now, since we're always been now, and we understand a spiritual sense of that, now we have been moved from the physical Israelites, because he said, I will build my ecclesia. He didn't say, I will build Israel. He didn't say, I'm going to restore Israel. He didn't say, I'm going to bring back. No, he says, I'm going to build. First thing he said, I'm going to build my own ecclesia. Wait a minute. Do you do that first after you've done everything else? No, first thing I'm going to do is build that. Why would he want to do that first? The very first thing that Moses had to do was what? Prepare the things that go inside of the temple. I mean, inside of the ark. There was ark. He had to create the ark first before something had to go inside of it. Right? So, what's most important? Well, the latter is more important than the former. When they went through the sea, it was greater than the first time. You say, what was the first time? When they went down there. What did God bring out of Egypt? Spiritually speaking, he brought something out. Physically speaking, we say, well, he brought a bunch of people out from the tribe of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all that coming in. Blatter, 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 blatter. And we go on with that way. But he says, I brought you out and you are my first crop. What? Wait a minute. What about the other one? What about sheep? Kazir? Wait, yeah. That one too. That was also first. I began. And the latter is going to be greater. The word of God so says, what did Yahshua say to his disciples? You will do greater works than I. We say, oh, no one can do greater works than you. So either someone's lying to us or we don't accept what he said. That's very important. Even in your private life, you have to look at it in your own private life. Something should be greater when your life comes to an end than it was when he first began to deal with you. So we have this tabernacle. And everything surrounded about this very important tabernacle, appointment, tabernacle of appointments. Now, Levites were appointed to be part of the appointments, right? But so was Israel. On the outer sanctuary, they're also appointed to be there. They've done their function, done their job, done what they're supposed to do, stayed where they're supposed to stay, do what they're supposed to do. And they, in the flesh, of course, we look at them and they failed. It's because God was so weak he couldn't make him do it? Or is God showing us how he is building his dwelling place? When the new Jerusalem comes down, do you think it's because, oh, some miracle? No, it's a picture of the building for him to live. And what is it? The house of his son who is building this house. So how close are you? How close are you to be joined with, let's say, the high priest? Right? These joins, the Levites were joined to be service to a high priest named Aaron. Why are you, who are you joined to? Hillel Fellowship is going to perish and dissolve and be worthless. A high priest. Next question. Are you joined with him or are you exiled from him? Are you a Levite spiritually or not? Now you got the picture? This is not a story of how it's just a physical thing and do this, do that, clean this up, do that, do this. But each one of us, and the Apostle Paul says, each one of us have a job to do. Not all are to be priests. Or I should say, not all should be apostles. I want to be one. No. God appoints them. Not all be evangelists. No, no. I want to be evangelist. No, God appoints them. What has he appointed me to do? I know what he wants me to do, and I'm not going to veer from that unless he's telling me, now I want you to do this as well. Because sometimes he has a guy do two things. Sometimes people have a multiple of gifts, two, maybe three. I seem to only have one. I'm happy with it. I'm hunky-dory with it. I'm not best at it. I'm just doing my very best. But you understand what I'm saying? If we're not joined to, quote, Aaron, end of quote, then we're not there. This is what it's telling us about the Levites. And God said, I've chosen the Levites instead of the firstborn of the flesh. Do you understand that? It's not that you deserve it. It's not that they deserve it. It's just that that's what he does. Have I lost anybody here today? Probably, huh? I know there's technical errors here and there in this particular chapter. I don't care about the technical errors in this chapter. It's unimportant to me. The numbers are unimportant to me. It's what it's all about. You see, I put the way, I'll put in different language, okay? This is what Richard Agee sees. This is what Richard Agee thinks. This is what Richard Agee talks about, okay? How's that sound? Better than anything else. Because you can have your own thought, your own way, your own thing. You have a different picture. That's hunky-dory. No one has to do anything I say, think, or believe. I know I've said it before, but sometimes people think I know everything. Oh, I don't know anything. I know so little. Struggling so hard to figure out why the men are a certain location, why the names are there, what they mean, what's it showing me. You know, it's work. During the days of unleavened bread, it's probably the one period of time in history, in my life rather, that I work harder to understand the days of unleavened bread than anything else. I don't work so hard to try to understand Shavuot. I don't work so hard to understand Yom Kippurim or the Feast of Trumpets or the big one. My time, I get exhausted, really get downright exhausted when I go to the 7 days of unleavened bread. It wears me out.
Yeah.
Don't worry about me. But you understand? Now, there are places, like know that each one of you, you'll be drawn by the Creator of heaven and earth to center in on a certain holy day or a period of time that is important, and you should be centered in on that. That's where God wants you to be centered in on. That's what you should be centered in on. Don't come and center on anything that I'm centering on, because God centered me on this, period, point blank. No one else has to be centered on it. Unimportant. Wherever God places you, for you to look and study his word, to think about him, think about his word, his actions, his anything about him, right? That's where you belong. And many of us think, well, I sure wish I was as smart as that person was. Wrong message. As Apostle Paul said, he has given to each one of us a measure of trust. It says faith, right? A measure of trust. God has given you, everyone in this room, something, a measure of trust. And what do you do with that measure? If you try to measure your trust with somebody else's trust, and their trust seems to be far greater measure than your measure, then you're foolishly, and Apostle Paul says, it's comparing yourself amongst yourself is foolishness. There was a sermon many, many years ago. The man, he was a builder. He said, you know, He didn't say that the temple of God needed a wedge to make it straighten it out. He used a paraphrase. Now, let's suppose that the temple's built. And there's a little crooked, and you take a wedge, you hammer it in there, and now it's all straight. And he said, you know, some of you guys made it the wedges. It was a funny commercial. I mean, funny thing. He didn't mean it literally. He was just using his analogy. But yeah, well, God placed you. That's where you're supposed to be. Do it. Live it. Walk it. Think it. Be it. That's what this is all about.